That's your number six. And chapter number seven, Geisler's book. Now we try to answer the question, can we know? Can anybody tell me what the answer basically was?
Yes.
Okay, is it just definitely, is it just a big yes or what?
No.
It's a yes, because if we assume that no, then our whole discussion is useless.
Okay, but it's probably, I would say it's probably a yes. We can know some things, not everything, we can know some things beyond reasonable doubt. You know, if you want to, Geisler,
high degree of probability.
Yeah, with a high degree of probability, we can know some things with actual undeniability, but we're probably not going to get too much into that in this philosophy course, and apologetics and philosophy of religion, but well, we get a little bit into it. But you might want to just write that in your book it's up to you, but to put that, can we know? Yes, we can know some things beyond reasonable doubt. And that way what it does is it'll be giving you an overview of the class and the answers. After everything is well thought out, what would the Christian's answer be in some of these? Response be. Now, how can we know? We show that skeptical claims are unjustified. We'll give the skeptics, we can't know things with absolute certainty, because it's always, you know, just when you think you know something that's absolutely certain, I'm convinced somebody is out to kill me, he's coming after me, he's already shooting me, and all of a sudden you wake up with a cold sweat and you realize you were dreaming. It's always possible that you're going to wake up tomorrow and find out that the first 25 years of your life was one big dream, and in reality, only you exist. That's logically possible. But if anybody in this room holds to that view, I think you're sick. The fact is, you know,
it doesn't matter what you think of me, though, because as soon as I wake up, you're going to be gone.
Well, there you go. Good. Good. Sounds good. Deducting points. Okay. So for the most part, skeptical claims are unjustified so long as we settle for knowledge with a high degree of probability or knowledge beyond reasonable doubt. You know, some things we know we have more evidence for than others, and so if we get the things that we have a lot of evidence for and use those as premises to prove the things that we have less evidence for, we can conclude some things that would be, we can know with a pretty high degree of probability. Now what we have to ask is, in chapter 7, okay, so we can know, the answer is yes, so now we have to ask, how can we know? Can anybody tell me, first off, though, what branch of philosophy are we in? Epistemology. Keep that in mind. When we talk about questions of knowledge, you're talking about epistemology. So now we ask the question, can we know? We said, yeah, and we can't know it. Can't know all things. We're not omniscient. We can only know some things. And we can't know anything with absolute certainty, because we're fallible, but we can know with a high degree of probability. So now, how can we know? There's five different beliefs, five different ways that we can know, that have been given throughout the history of philosophy. The first is called faith, or authoritarianism, you know, faith in an authority. Once the authority has spoken, such as the Bible, or an infallible pope, or an infallible scientist named Carl Sagan, once she has spoken, we believe it. A lot of people think that that's scientific if you accept whatever Sagan says. No, that's faith if you accept whatever Sagan says. Yeah.
Good example would be Julius Hansel.
Yeah, in some ways, yes, and in other ways, yeah, but I think his views do revert back to Phidism.
One of
We'll take a look at these, but yeah, Cornelius Van Til is a Phidias. Rory and I have had a lot of discussions about him, and he was a Phidias. Now he probably holds to Rory and I's view now that he's in heaven now. But okay, faith or authoritarianism, do the same thing. Second one, subjectivism. Now some Phidias are in this category more than faith, but we'll get into some of that stuff a little later as time goes on. Rationalism, and I'll define these. Empiricism. And then number five, pragmatism. Can we know? Yes. Okay, well then how can we know? Now faith and authoritarianism, faith or authoritarianism, this actually happens to be the most common source of our beliefs. Most of the things we believe by faith in somebody who told us, or faith in the textbook we're reading, or faith in our religion, or faith in scientists, or faith in the authorities that that tell us that we have cancer. How many people right now, if they told you, went to the doctor, they gave you a checkup, and they came back 2 weeks later, and the test came out positive, you have cancer, if we don't operate tonight, you will die in a couple weeks. How many people would say, you know, we might say we want a second opinion, but either we get a second opinion, and he comes up with the same conclusion, how many of us are going to say, just forget the operation? No. But we're acting on faith and their authority that they really know what they're talking about. So faith isn't always a bad thing. A lot of non-Christians act like only Christians have faith, yet they drive over tons and tons of concrete suspended hundreds of feet over water, a large body of water called the Warner Avenue Bridge, with their 2,000 pounds of machinery, their cars, and they have total confidence that the bridge isn't going to cave in, because they have faith in man's technology and ability to build huge bridges like that. That's not blind faith, that's faith based on the evidence. But a lot of times our faith is not based on the evidence, and sometimes we should rethink some of the things we believe. But anyway, faith or authoritarianism is the testimony, accepting the testimony of others. That would be an example of it. Accepting the testimony of others. We accept beliefs as justified when they seem to come from reliable sources. I love when people say, well, the Brownist son said this, the FBI said that. Well, okay, if it said it, that's important, but that still doesn't make it true until we investigate it. Because the Seattle PI right now, their credibility is about as high as the National Enquirer. But, you know, accepting the testimony of others, we accept beliefs as justified when they seem to come from reliable sources. Subjectivism is based on your feelings. Rationalism, I'll go over them again. Rationalism is based on reason, going through reason alone. Empiricism, going through the five senses, and pragmatism, if it works, it's true. These plus faith or authoritarianism, which is testimony of others, and if they're reliable sources, you think we're justified, what do you think we would put our historical knowledge? What do you think that would fall under?
We're relying on the authors of the history to have told us
things don't add up. Yep. We're relying on other sources. So, if we can prove the Apostle Paul wrote Corinthians in 54 A.D., which even critical scholars accept, if he says in that book that he saw Jesus risen from the dead, that's a pretty reliable source. Now, we're going to say, yeah, but Anthony Flew said that Jesus didn't rise from the dead. Well, that's not a real reliable historical source, because he's talking 2,000 years after the fact. Now, if we can find people 2,000 years ago saying he didn't rise from the dead and presenting evidence that outweighs Paul's, then you got a big case on your hands. So you don't find that.
So with Paul, we have secondhand appearances, because he made that statement based on the evidence of his five senses. He saw Jesus.
It was empiricism for him, but it's still faith for us. And what does Jesus say? Does Jesus say, yeah, you shouldn't believe something unless you know it through empiricism, the five senses?
Blessed are those who see, exactly, who have not seen yet believe.
He told Thomas that I won't believe unless I know that Jesus has risen empirically by the five senses. Then when he saw Jesus, he said, my Lord, my God. Jesus said, you see me and you believe. Blessed are those who have not seen and believe. He's not saying leap of blind faith, but he should have believed. He should have had enough faith in the other apostles. Faith in their authority. They were reliable eyewitnesses. He should have had faith in them. That's what we, our faith rests in today. That's what we believe.
Yes, because after all, most people's beliefs are going to be based on the first principle they're on. The first ages, most people are
succeed.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's it. Why is that the most common source of our beliefs, faith, or authority? You just said it, really.
The vast majority of what you know is not something that you saw, but something you were told.
And let's get away from the word saw, because that's only just the sight. It's what it amounts to is nobody's experienced everything. So there's an awful lot of things that if you're going to believe them, you've got to accept it on the basis of somebody else's testimony who claims to have experienced it, such as Paul, who claims to have experienced seeing Jesus Christ risen from the dead.
Only 22 people went to the moon, but most people in America believe that they did, even those of us who weren't alive to see it.
I'll be coming out with a book next month that's going to be the food medicine. It was really a waste of government money.
It was on a sound stage in California.
Hey, buddy. And you've heard those stories too.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just not sure the moon exists. Okay, our historical knowledge is based on other testimonies. The same holds for current events in foreign lands. How many people here believe that Bill Clinton won the last presidential election? It's hard to believe, but it's our faith, or even he has to believe when the people come up to him and say, the polls show that you won, Mr. and you're now the President of the United States.
He didn't go count the vote.
You see, it is impossible for us to reason and to experience everything. Impossible for us to reason everything and to experience everything. Now, what we want to do now, that's what faith authoritarianism is. Can we know, is that the only way that we can know? Suppose somebody says through faith or authoritarianism, that's the only way we can know. Let's evaluate that. Okay? Evaluate faith as the sole criterion for the justification of knowledge. It is always, the more it's always possible to ask why we should believe in authority. Okay? It's always possible to ask why we should believe in authority. What if somebody introduced me to you as Dr. Phil Fernandez, and then told me their symptoms, and then asked me to diagnose their illness? And I put my head down, and I shook my head, and I said, you're going to die in 2 weeks. I like to be blunt with people when I talk to them. And, you know, the guy would feel devastated. But then if you told them that my doctorate is in ministry and I'm working on another doctorate in philosophy of religion, he wouldn't be so devastated because he's realizing that I'm an authority speaking totally out of my field. But it's always possible to ask why we should believe in authority, even if the authority's in the right area. Just because the guy's got a PhD in geology doesn't mean that because he says evolution occurred, evolution did occur. We could always question them. Who are the guys that believe by blind faith today? Are they the Christians who provide scientific evidence for the existence of God? Or are the guys who have blind faith the guys who just all they do in debates against me is quote scientist after scientist after scientist? What would he do if I just started quoting Bible verse after Bible verse after Bible verse? He says, you just believe that stuff by blind faith. You don't even test it. Well, when are they going to get slammed for not testing Carl Sagan? And not testing their scientists who are more often pseudoscientists than anything else?
Because when's the last time you picked up a fossil bone and dated yourself?
Well,
the scientists do it for me.
So now, it's always possible to ask why we should believe in authority. Therefore, we often have to appeal to something besides authority. So it can't be the sole criteria. Authorities often disagree. You bring in a psychologist to say that my client is sane, when he's being tried for murder, then I'll bring a psychologist to testify with the same credentials to testify that he's insane. And believe me, for every scientist that'll say that my client's sane, I can find one who'll say he's insane. Because the two psychologists don't even agree, they don't even know what sane and insane means. So they got different definitions, so I just get the one that favors my position. Happens all the time. Authorities often disagree. In fact, probably more times than not. I should know, I'm an authority on the subject. So, there's three ways to measure authorities. One, the prestige or the credentials of an authority. Two, the number of authorities who hold that belief. You can say, well, more authorities are evolutionists than creationists, therefore evolution must be true. Or we can argue the persistence of the belief. Well, people have been, what about this argument? People have been believing the pre-trib rapture position since the 1830s. It must be true. I used an argument like that on me. I said, but we can go all the way back. We can go all the way back to 100 AD and find Christians who believe in a post-trib return of Christ, that they would see the Antichrist first. So the post-trib position is even older. But the fact is, none of these three are totally conclusive. What if you get Bruce Metzger, who's got 5 PhDs, rather than some other guy who's got 4? Just because he's got one more PhD doesn't mean he's going to be right. Just because there's more authorities or scientific authorities who believe in evolution and creation, it doesn't make evolution right. And just because a belief has been held for centuries doesn't make it right. So, faith or authoritarianism is not the only way to find truth. Maybe subjectivism. Maybe that will be the only way that we can find truth. This belief is that the knower has some kind of direct contact with what is known. They talk like this. They say, if you experience it, you know it. Mysticism. See, you know, some people go through mystical experiences, seeing the unity of all things and then not being able to explain it in words. You know, you just got to experience it. You can't explain it in words. This type of subjectivism, if you experience it, you know it. The knower having some kind of direct contact with what is known is called direct or common sense realism. I don't want to get in right now to the phenomenology of Edmund Husserl. I had a heck of a time pronouncing it anyway, but I don't want to get into that right now. I don't think we need to. But he basically believes you can start, his philosophical system, what it does is it starts by removing all presuppositions from the mind and just accepting the data that is there. But that's his presupposition, is that it's possible to have a philosophy without presuppositions. So, you know, he's not making much sense either. But the evaluation of subjectivism alone is the sole criterion for the justification of beliefs is as follows. Subjectivism usually ends up with solipsism. Solipsism is the belief that the world exists only in my mind. That's solipsism. The world exists only in my mind. Subjectivism can't call any belief wrong. Supposing I had a Hubble belief subjectively, and so did John, but his was a different belief. I couldn't say he's wrong because if subjectivism is the final test, then he's right in believing what he believes, and I'm right in believing what I believe. Subjectivism can't call any belief wrong. Experience alone is insufficient. Our experiences must be interpreted. Two of us are driving in a car, and a cat runs out, and I slam on the brakes, and the car jolts forward, and you say, "Oh my God, Phil, you hit the cat." And I say, "No, I don't think I hit him. I think he got, I'm convinced, I believe he got away." Well, there's an objective truth out there. What we've got to do is get out of that car and see if we can find that cat. And dead or alive, if we find the cat, it could go a long way to letting us know whether or not which one of our subjective beliefs is true. So subjectivism alone fails. What about rationalism? The view that the justification of our beliefs is found in reason alone. Remember, faith in authoritarianism is in the testimony of others. Subjectivism is in your own experience. Your own feelings or rationalism is reason alone. Okay? Rationalism, the view that justification of our beliefs is found in reason alone. The starting point for rationalists must be certain, because a rationalist attempts to deduce the whole of reality. If you're going to say point number one, A, point number two, B, therefore conclusion, C. Well, the only way that conclusion is going to come from those is, first off, your starting point has to be certain. Because if your starting point could be false, even if the conclusion follows from it, that could be false too. So your starting point must be certain. So rationalists attempt to deduce from a certain starting point the whole of reality. Now, when we evaluate the method of rationalism alone to justify beliefs, we see that reason is at least a good, very good negative test for justification. In other words, although reason might fail to find an absolute point of certainty to start from, it can at least show that certain things must be false. For instance, if I say that I am a man and a non-man, that is false. I can't be both. See, it violates the law of non-contradiction. So at least reason is at least a good negative test for justification. It can at least refute somebody. That's why Gordon Clark uses reason to tear down everybody else's systems of thought by showing that it violates the law of non-contradiction. Suppose you had a worldview that teaches that God is eternal, but that God is also had a beginning. In the same sense and in the same way. In its basic essence. Which I believe you can reduce panentheism to that. Well, then that would have to be false, because it fails the law of non-contradiction. It contradicts itself. So no belief that's contrary to reason can be justified. So it's at least a negative test. However, to positively find information, we can prove things are false, but to prove something is true, something can contain no known contradictions and still be false. Okay? And the problem is, there's no generally agreed upon starting point. Descartes started with himself. I think, therefore, I am. Spinoza, Leibniz, they started with different starting points. Rationalists have never agreed on what the starting point. What is there anything out there that we definitely know? And rationalists usually introduce hidden assumptions behind the reason. Let's face it, I'll tell you how hard it is to start with pure rationalism. Let's say that A was our starting point. The reason why A was our starting point is because we have proven, absolutely, we are absolutely certain that A is true because we have definitely proven to be true. Well, what have you proven it with? You've proven it with sub A. And then sub A 2 and sub A 3. How do you know sub A 3? If you know A for certain, then you've got to know each one of those for certain. So what are your reasons for knowing sub A 3 for certain? So you have an infinite regress, and you never do get a starting point.
So the statement, I think, therefore I am, which could have functioned as a starting point in rationalism, what would your sub-statements be to prove that?
Basically all it would get at there is there's no real solid reason that I can see of, or even Descartes' statement there. All he really showed, to be a little Kantian there, is that he really, the more he doubts, the more he feels convinced that he exists. But it still really hasn't proven his existence. Now, if he would argue, not out of the realm of pure reason alone, actual undeniability for his existence, then I would say, yeah, he's on to something there. That's what Geisler does. But it's always logical. When the antithesis of your belief is always logically possible, it isn't a contradiction, then your belief is not logically necessary. Which is what rationalism, in other words, is always logically possible that you don't exist. Okay? See what I'm getting at?
No, I don't.
There's no contradiction to say you that you're not existing would not be a contradiction. A square circle is contradictory.
That's by definition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is where realm of reason, the thing's got to be definitionally.
Well, if you start with it, I think it was last week we said that if you make statements. If every one of your statements is a statement of definition, then your conclusion must also be a statement of definition, which has not told you anything about the real world.
Yeah.
So that wouldn't make a good starting point for rational arguments, because you would just have a big web of dictionary by the time you were done, and you still have learned nothing about the world.
That's what I'm saying about what the problem with pure reason is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But all I'm getting at is with well, you've got to. There's got to be some assumption that's going to be made. We'll get to it, but pure reason alone, you can prove that something is false because it's contradictory.
Sure.
But you can't prove that something is true with certainty, other than definite things that are true by definition, which again tell you nothing by. Tell you nothing about reality and all. So, but anyway, rationalists usually introduce hidden assumptions besides the reason, and reason can only demonstrate, therefore, what is possible rather than what is actual. Let me bring this up. Everything that you can think of must fall in at least one of these categories. Impossible, possible, or actual. Give me an object. Give me something.
Visible, invisible.
Okay. just give me an object so we don't have to...
Fork.
A fork is possible for forks to exist, and there are even some actual forks. Okay? But what if we said a fork... Well, yeah, a fork could lose its teeth. What if we said a square circle? Is it possible for there to be a square circle? If it's not possible, then it couldn't be actual in a square circle, so then it's impossible for there to be a square circle. Is there a rock heavier than the heaviest rock? Than the heaviest rock ever? No. That's impossible. So, any one of these things. And now, rationalism can prove something is contradictory, so it's impossible. Or it can prove something is non-contradictory, so it is possible, meaning possibly true. But to prove that it's actual, you need more than just reason alone. Okay? Now, realm of, well, I don't even know if I should get off on the into the ontological argument.
Are these three, in Apocalypse, what are those three categories of?
Well, categories of being. Impossible being is a being that cannot exist. Possible being is a being that can possibly exist, but it could also possibly not exist. And an actual being is a being that does exist. And you add one more category here.
You're saying that it's impossible for the greatest possible rock, for rock to be greater than the greatest possible rock, because by definition, the greatest possible rock is just that.
The heaviest possible rock, you couldn't get anything that.
Yeah, but you can also say that the greatest, the biggest possible rock is itself an impossibility.
The ontological argument does is it uses these concepts, and it argues that God as a necessary being is defined as a being that cannot not exist. Therefore, if a necessary being is not an impossible being, a necessary being cannot be a possible being because he has no possibility of not existing. Therefore, the only way a necessary being can exist is as a necessary being. He actually exists. So then that's the way it argues. Now, there's a big debate about whether that's actually a valid argument or not. And I don't want to get into that right now. We will get to it later. But that's rationalism, reason. So reason can only demonstrate what is possible, not what is actual. Okay?
That something can be possible and yet not actually exist.
It is possible. It is possible that at age 34, I could become a Major League Baseball player.
Right, so it didn't actually happen.
But and I'm still 34, there's still time. It's possible, okay? But to see that actualized, I'd be very shocked. But then you can really...
You can even
differentiate between something being logically possible and being actually possible. In other words, it is logically possible that God could create a world of free beings, of multitudes of free beings who never sin, freely never sin. That is logically possible. There's no contradiction there. However, it may be actually impossible. In other words, it may be that every world of a multitude of free beings, they would always, somewhere along the line, somebody would always freely choose to do evil. See, well, we just don't know.
Right.
Okay? Anyway, but empiricism, by the way, guys are using that actual for actual undeniability. So, rather than rational necessity or logical necessity, uses actual undeniability to say, I have to actually exist to even deny my existence, so it is actually undeniable that I exist. But that's not saying it's logically necessary that I exist, because my non-existence is logically possible, or possible being. To be a necessary being, the only being whose non-existence would be impossible, if that whole concept is correct, would be a necessary being, a being that cannot not exist.
Yeah.
But, okay, empiricism, the view that experience rather than reason is the source of knowledge. So now empiricism, let me say something here. This is, empiricism is sense experience. Subjectivism is more of an inward experience type thing, okay? And the words are getting real sloppy here to try to differentiate the two, but it isn't.
So love would be a subjective, would be subject to subjective analysis rather than empirical analysis.
Yeah, because if you believe in love subjectively, if you're a subjectivist, love exists.
Right.
Okay?
But you can't.
But empiricists would have a hard time putting love in a test tube.
Right.
Okay, if there's a view that experience, sense experience, rather than reason is the source of knowledge. Knowledge ultimately depends on our senses. The weaker form of empiricism says our senses do give us some type of knowledge. That's the weaker form. The stronger form says all knowledge comes from sense experience. A stronger form says our ideas and our concepts are wholly derived, completely derived from experiences. In other words, there's no such thing as invisible universe. Well, now some would argue for them, but the only way to find those universals would be through sense experience. In some ways, Aquinas and Aristotle are very heavy empiricists, but they're not really complete, because the guys that are the deepest into empiricism, there are no absolutes. There is no, everything is in the world of senses, period. But you get some guys that all knowledge comes from sense experience, like Aquinas said, everything in the mind was first in the senses except the mind itself. But he would argue that from sense experience we learn things about the invisible realm as well. Okay? John Locke taught that there is nothing in the intellect which is not first in the senses. That's what Locke said. Aquinas added the condition except the intellect itself. And so what Aquinas means, that was like, it's like we had a computer, a pre-programmed computer that could take sense data on in and act upon it. Aquinas said the mind is the mind can be broken into two compartments, the active mind and the receptive mind. The receptive mind takes in the sense data, but then the active mind works upon it to draw conclusions that go beyond sense experience. Rational conclusions, universal conclusions. David Hume himself also reduced all ideas to empirical experiences. Immanuel Kant was not an empiricist, but denied that there is any knowledge of reality derived from pure reason alone. So you gotta have reason plus experience to get some kind of knowledge. And the evaluation of the method of empiricism alone to justify beliefs, empiricism fails to account for all knowledge. It often leads to skepticism, as it did with David Hume. Universals cannot be derived from experience alone. Gordon Clark made that point over and over again. How are you going to get moral values just from looking at a rock? You're just not going to get it. You've got to go in. Ideas such as equal or parallel, they are never found in experience. ideas such as equal or parallel are never found in experience, the knower must come equipped with these concepts, or else he will not be able to interpret the experiences. Okay? You've got to go in there with some innate ideas. So, contrary to Aquinas, I would argue man really didn't start as a blank slate. In our conscious mind, we may have been a blank slate, but at least in the unconscious mind, we had certain ideas that we were created in God's image. We had those ideas that it took us with our brains and with our bodies. The soul could not tap into those ideas that were there until we had some kind of sense experience to trigger this. But once these ideas are triggered, they make judgments on the sense data rather than the sense data gives us these universals.
So that would be something like, let's say the concept of a parallel. It's in your brain, but you don't know it's there until you experience it, and you can't deduce it. It has to be there in your mind in order for you to recognize it when you see it.
Just like equals. See, two markers of equal size. We don't learn that from seeing two equal things. We have to know what equality is first to determine, to judge that they're equal.
Here is something with
equal. So, and he gets a lot to play. Plato's ideas, what Augustine did with all these universal ideas, universal forms that were invisible, unchangeable, and eternal. All Plato did was took all these ideas and put them in the mind of God. Augustine was Platonic, Aquinas was Aristotelian. And Aristotle started with the particulars and argued to the universal. Plato started with the universals and argued to the particulars, but did not see the particulars as fully real. The ultimate reality is the concept, the essence, the nature. It's the manness that makes an individual man a man. That the invisible concept of man, the general, generic concept of man.
So it doesn't matter that this is a chair, and in that room there are two different kinds of chairs. What matters is that they are all a chair. And the concept of chair that unites all three is what really matters.
It does matter that they're different particulars, but the ultimate meaning is the definition of what it is. And so, with Plato, is it makes the real world a little bit unreal. And with Gordon Clark, he's fine with that. With me, I'm not so fine with that. Okay. But I'm moving more and more towards Plato than I was more Aristotelian, more Thomistic. At one time. Now someday I'll show you my view of epistemology, which is kind of a combination of both Augustine and Aquinas. Okay, pragmatism, the fifth, is that our ideas or beliefs that work are considered true. So it's a result. If you get the results you want, then it must be true. If it works, it must be true. Ideas or beliefs that fail are considered false. William James and John Dewey, the father of modern education, held to these views. Now, evaluation of the method of pragmatism to justify beliefs, lies often work, though they are not true. You can tell a guy, look, hey, Phil, I really think you're going to win that fight tonight. You're going to knock this guy out. Don't worry about it. And if I go in there and knock the guy out, and you find out you were lying through your teeth, but you just wanted to give me some confidence, the lie worked, but it wasn't true. You really thought I was going to, you were lying through your teeth. You really thought I was going to get my butt kicked on that night. The statement, X is useful, is not synonymous with X is true. Okay? They're saying two different things. Just because something works doesn't mean that it's true. A guy might be able to make a great career that works for him robbing banks. That doesn't make it right. And pragmatism can not only argue that something it makes something true, it can also argue that it makes things right. If it works, it must be good. The end justifies the means. But pragmatism gives up objective grounds for testing beliefs. In conclusion, the conclusion of this chapter, Geisler and Feinberg argue that we have examined five different methods of justifying our beliefs. None of them alone can justify all of our beliefs. Each method is best suited for a specific kind of knowledge. Look at the conclusion. They give a great conclusion.
Yeah.
Faith is best suited for our knowledge of the past and for the testimony of others in court as well. Intuition, that would be subjectivism. Intuition, our sense of beauty or taste, but also for ethics. We just know that killing innocent babies is wrong. Reason is best to show that contradictory beliefs cannot be true, they cannot be justified. But reason is also our source of beliefs about math, logic, and certain universals. In fact, I think the universals we came with those in our mind. We created God's image with those in our mind. And it just takes sense experience to trigger that from the unconscious. Experience is the best source for our knowledge of the external world. I mean, if you put worked on a person in such a way that you tap them off from any sense experience at all, they would have no knowledge of the external world. And then pragmatism regulates our behavior where moral laws don't apply. In those gray areas, like, I want to go to school, but I have to take care of my family. Well, what might work in that situation is going to school part-time and working full-time. Or what might work better for you is working part-time and going to school full-time. But whatever the case, neither one of them is ethically wrong, and so whatever works best for you would be best to use in that situation. That's why fighting abortion, that's why I don't think protesting at abortion clinics is the best way to go and trespassing like that. Not that I think it's ethically wrong to trespass to save human lives.